the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, USA Today's NFL wire site that covers the Arizona Cardinals. It is episode 598, and it is the first of two preview shows that we will have this week as the Cardinals go on the road to face the San Francisco 49ers this weekend in week five. This is the audio version of our Behind Enemy Lines, as longtime friend of the show, Kyle Madsen, managing editor over at Niners Wire, our sister site on the USA Today NFL Wire, joins me for this show. Kyle, how you been? It hasn't been that terribly long, and we'll probably talk again at the end of the year when we meet in week 18.
Yeah, I would hope so. I was going to complain about the weather here where I am up in Northern California. We've been in the high 90s, and I think we touched 100 today. But then I realized that you're an Arizona guy, and I'm just going to keep that complaint to myself.
Well, and we hit, I think it was 110 on October 1st. In fairness, that was the first 110-degree temperature ever in Phoenix in October. But I'm not technically in Arizona this week, as I came out to Austin to visit my oldest daughter. So I went out for a walk at like 10 o'clock, and it was warm, but it didn't feel like an oven, which if I decided to walk outside even to get the mail at 10 in the morning at home, no. But hey, we always talk about it's a dry heat. But if you've ever opened, like if you've ever put anything in the oven and you open it up to get the thing out and that wall of heat, that's what it feels like when you walk outside.
It's a dry heat, but it like, and I went to Key West last year in October, and it was so humid, right? Because you're in Key, so you have the Florida humidity, but then you're down in the Keys and it's like high of 83, low of 86. Like it was disgusting, and I'm just sweating. So I understand why humidity stinks, but in Arizona, it's not that it's hot. It's like 112, 150. That goes beyond the dryness, and it just seeps into your bones.
And it is walk outside. It feels like an oven. It does feel like an oven. And the worst part is I've lived here my entire life. I love it. But the hard part about it isn't the hot during the day. It's that in July and August, it's 95 degrees.
Exactly.
As the low. So at 4 in the morning, 5 in the morning, when you get up and you walk outside and it's dark and it's still, once it dips down below 80, the hot during the day is tempered by a crispness in the evening.
Right.
But big city, I grew up this way. I didn't even grow up with air conditioning in my house. I don't know how we lived. I didn't have air conditioning in my house growing up. And I remember it being super sticky and warm. And like, 1980s, 1990s. Maybe I just didn't know better.
I guess.
Or global warming, whatever it is. But we're not here to talk about the Arizona weather as much as we want to gripe about that. We've got the Cardinals and 49ers playing on Sunday at Levi's Stadium at 4:05 p.m., or as we like to call it, 1:05 p.m. because watching sports on the West Coast is the absolute best.
Yep.
I'm 2 hours ahead in Austin, and I'm confused with Monday Night Football starting at 7:20 p.m. here. I'm like, what?
Hate it.
I'm like nobody on the East Coast even cares about the West Coast, as we've learned about college football over these years. But I will say this: I had to watch all the games and go to bed at a decent hour.
That's what, dude, Arizona, living, because I lived in Arizona for 2.5 years, and shout out to Gilbert, salute to the Valley. I loved the mountain time portion of the season. When the clocks go back everywhere else except Arizona, and you get those 11 o'clock morning kickoffs, just perfection. That's the perfect sweet spot of when kickoff should be, because you got 11, 2, and when's 6, like, yes, give me that every time.
Yeah, you can literally watch football all day long and get to bed by 11 o'clock. It's glorious. Yeah, it's come on. West Coast lifestyle is great. I'm not going to complain about that.
Times are great.
Yes. So we've got the 49ers. We had Cardinals going into town to play the 49ers, who started out a little bit rocky. They're at 2-2. No Christian McCaffrey. It feels like, is this the year where, like, the injuries mount? Is this the result of multi-years long seasons? Because it seems like every injury that could happen has. I mean, you've dealt with, obviously, you had the Brandon Ayuk holdout situation. Deebo Samuel's gotten banged up. George Kittle's gotten banged up. Obviously, Christian McCaffrey hasn't played like that yet this year. Is this sort of paying the piper of having long seasons and deep into the playoffs?
Yeah, it might be a little bit of that. There's injuries up and down the league, though. Like, I feel like if you play fantasy football right now, it's a nightmare, right? So I think that has something to do with it, though, for sure. But then again, like, Christian McCaffrey has been banged up in his career. Deebo Samuel's been banged up in his career. George Kittle's been banged up. Like, those three guys being hurt is not that shocking.
That's true.
Out here, when we talk about Deebo for a season, like, it's baked in, okay, in 14 games. Like, can you get 14 out of Deebo? Can you get 15 out of Kittle? Like, that's just – So I think that might have something to do with it, for sure. But they were dealing with this in training camp, man. They had joint practices scheduled with the Saints that they had to cancel because they did not have enough players healthy on their 90-man roster to execute a joint practice.
That's crazy.
So it's just, I think it's just kind of one of those years. They had really pretty good injury luck last year. And I think that's kind of where it's just, hey, it's hard to have really good injury luck 2 years in a row. They were fortunate. Deebo only missed a game. George Kittle only missed a game. Christian McCaffrey may or may not miss the entire season. That's all TBD. But Javon Hargrave is now out. He partially tore his tricep. So that's a big one, a defensive tackle. So we'll see. It just feels like one of those years where, hey, this is just going to kind of be the theme for the season. It's just a matter of whether they can overcome it or not.
And you know, they did look vulnerable early on.
Mm-hmm.
And even with the loss to the Rams, the ending, you still look at offensively, they're still doing great. Mm-hmm. I mean, just the fact that, and I just wrote up an article about this on Tuesday when stats came out, and like, are you kidding me? They have a top five passer in Brock Purdy, a top five receiver in who? Jawan Jennings?
Jawan, baby.
And then, of course, Jordan Mason. So they lose the league's best running back, the guy who has the rushing title, and Christian McCaffrey. They replace him with a guy named Jordan Mason.
Mm-hmm.
And he would be leading the NFL in rushing if Derrick Henry hadn't gone crazy on Monday night.
Right. Yeah, man.
And that's absurd. And it's obscene. And I've talked to you about this before. It's not fair. Except that I know at some point Jordan Mason's going to get hurt, because that's how running backs for the 49ers go. You take these no-name guys, they perform for a while, and then they get hurt. And so I'm crossing. I don't want injuries to happen per se, because that's bad. Okay, no. I just know it's going to happen.
No, right. Let's be adults about it. Like, he's on pace for like 387 carries. That's a lot. And if you watch Jordan Mason run, he's not shying away from contact. Like, that's his whole deal, is he's going to run through somebody. Explosive run plays have been there for the Niners this year. But Jordan Mason's longest carry of the year is 25 yards because he's just seeking contact all the time. So I agree with you, man. And it's been a big talking point for me is they have to figure out how to spell Jordan Mason and take some of the workload off of his plate. It feels a little bit like they're going, yeah, hey, we can give him a season's worth of carries in 8 weeks because we think Christian McCaffrey will be back in week 10. And that just, like, that's insane. He has bilateral Achilles tendonitis. Oh, and you're just going to bank on him coming back? So, okay, so putting that aside for a second, they trade up to draft a running back in the fourth round again, Isaac Garendo. who didn't play the first couple of weeks.
Seven touches, baby. Seven touches.
Okay, got one carry in week two for no yards. Got five carries in week three against the Rams and looked good. Like, looked like, okay, hey, they drew a lot of Raheem Mostert comps just from it kind of runs.
He's so fast. He's ridiculous fast.
Really fast, decisive, and when he finds a hole, it's like it could be a home run every time he touches the ball, right? So it's like, okay, he's gonna start being a factor. One carry last week. Fumbled the opening kickoff of the second half. Didn't see the field again. That was it. He was done. So yeah, I'm with you, man. Their offense has looked really good. Jordan Mason has looked really good. They need to figure out a way to take some of his carries away. But getting to a larger point, their offense isn't what I'm worried about. Like, everyone's wondering when Christian McCaffrey's coming back. I think their offense is fine without Christian McCaffrey. You mentioned Juwan Jennings. Juwan Jennings has been great.
Has it been just the consistency, the availability? Because, like, you've got Debo with 16 catches through four games. You've got Ayuk with 13. And obviously, it appears from the limited amount of stuff that I've watched from the 49ers this year, the time off in the offseason clearly is affecting his performance right now. And, you know, mid-season, late season, that'll probably come back. But contract holdouts tend to hurt players terms of reps.
Yeah, and I think it's more like a chemistry thing with Brock Purdy. Like, they're still trying to, I think, get on the same page as her, because he's getting open. Like, you go look at all the peripheral stats, it's not like he forgot how to play football.
Yeah.
So he dropped a touchdown in week one. It would have been a nice catch, but definitely a catch you expect him to make. He makes that catch. It's an extra 20 yards and a touchdown. There was a deep shot available against the Rams that Purdy turned down late in the game, that if they connect on that, he's got, you know, 50 plus more yards and another touchdown. All of a sudden, his stat line looks amazing. So he's not far off. But with Jennings, I think Purdy just trusts him. And that's one of the things, you know, for whatever faults he has, Purdy trusts his guys to go make plays. And that was against the Rams, that 11 catch game. It wasn't Juwan Jennings getting schemed up and being wide open on underneath routes and stuff. Like, no, he was making tough contested catches. In traffic, sliding catches, deep shots. Like, he was doing a little bit of everything. He's just a really good player. And I think anybody who's watched the 49ers consistently for the last few years knew that. You got McCaffrey and Kittle and Samuel and Ayuk. Like, there's just not a lot of touches for Jennings. But he's starting to grow into a bigger role. And I don't think it's a fluke. I think he's just a really good player. And I think that's really starting to come out with the added opportunities.
But then we go to the defense. Has ailed them defensively? Obviously, losing Hargrave is tremendously bad.
Yeah.
But they're giving up a lot of points. Give 19, like the Jets, 19 points. The Patriots, Patriots are terrible.
They holy smokes.
Hey, but, you know, watching them play, at least with the struggles that they had against Minnesota and the Rams, they at least looked like they did to the Patriots what the 49ers should have done to the Patriots.
Exactly.
And so, but 27 points to the Rams, 23 points to the Vikings. What is ailing them? Because the rushing defense has been better. It was better than how we closed the season, because it felt like last year, and I know you had two DTs out, it felt like that the Cardinals broke the 49ers run defense, and then after that, it was a struggle after that. But 68, 98, 73, just the Vikings put the Vikings did it, 146 yards. But and they've held three of their four opponents to under 300 yards. So they've created seven takeaways.
Mm-hmm.
What's missing? Because you've got some good metrics, but they're giving up points.
So it's, you can point to a couple. So the Vikings game flipped. The Niners had a fourth and goal at the two and went for it, didn't get it. And two plays later, the Vikings hit a 97-yard touchdown pass to Justin Jefferson, where he got matched up with George Odom, who's like a backup third-string safety, who got – Justin Jefferson's going to cook him every single time. Sam Darnold made a good throw. And the run after catch was good, and it was a touchdown. I kind of flipped that game, right? The Rams game, they had the Rams stopped up, fourth and six in their own territory. The Rams run a fake punt, get it, and that leads to a 16-play touchdown drive. And then they got a big punt return late in the game. There was a drop by the Niners offense. Like, things just kind of spiraled. But the overarching theme with the defense, and this, the Niners defense is a way bigger problem to me than like Christian McCaffrey's injury. Obviously, they'll be better when Christian McCaffrey comes back. But if they can't get stops, like, it's not going to matter. They cannot get off the field on third down. I believe through 3 weeks, might have been 2 weeks. It was 2 weeks. The 49ers had allowed opponents to convert 8 of 11 third and 7 or more.
Oh, wow.
It was like 72% or whatever that comes out to, and the rest of the league was at like 22%. And that's the problem. They were not rushing the passer. They were not effective getting after quarterbacks. They're not a team that likes to blitz a lot. So it was, hey, get home with 4, and nobody was getting home. And it was just easy. Like, there were too many easy throws for Darnold. There were too many easy throws for Stafford. And they made that adjustment against the Patriots, A, because the Patriots' offensive line is abominable. But a really interesting little shift, and I'm super interested to see how this goes against a much better offensive team in the Cardinals, is they blitzed 13 times the first 3 weeks combined. They blitzed the Patriots 11 times. Wow. So I'm fascinated to see if that's just their solution now, is, hey, they're going to just bring more pressure. But that's something that they have to change. They're going to mess with their personnel some, I think. Devondre Campbell's been starting at linebacker for them, Cardinals legend. And
he was not good. He was not great for the Cardinals, which is why they let him go.
Yeah, he's just he's old, he's slow, he's a step late on every run play. He's not good in coverage. He just they've dominated the second level with Dre Greenlaw and Fred Warner for so long that they're not anymore. And that, I think, is it. Everything I just said, dude, the longest-winded version of that answer, is they don't control the second level of the field anymore. And they're not rushing the passer effectively, and it's making it really hard to get off the field.
Now, statistically, if you look at the team, the sack numbers they have are skewed by the 6 sacks that they had against the Patriots. Kevin Gibbons, was that just a one-off that he had that game against New England?
He had 2.5 sacks in the second quarter against New England. He had 5.5 in his career going into Sunday. 60 games, he had 5.5 sacks. He had 2.5 in the second quarter. So, yeah, skewed a little. I don't think that's you said it. The Niners did what they had to do to the Patriots. Like, they just beat the heck out of the Patriots. The Patriots ran 2 more offensive plays, and the Niners doubled them up in yards.
Oh, wow.
Just obscene, right? They held him to 3.5 yards per play. They went like 7.2 yards per play. Just a dominant performance. But go. I don't know if you've tapped into that game at all. Go watch the Patriots offensive line. It is a mess. So it was nice to see the Niners defense dominate a bad offense, but like, I don't think they're going to do that to Arizona. I don't think it's suddenly like, hey, they figured out their pass rush. Like, no, the Patriots just can't block anybody. So I don't expect a player like Kevin Givens to make a big impact as a pass rusher. Malik Collins is a good player. He had a 1.5 sacks against New England. He's had some really, really good reps this year for them. He's a starter. He's a good player. But I just don't think they have the horses up front to do what they want to do defensively. And how they adapt to that over the next 14 weeks is, I think, going to kind of determine whether they make a run in the playoffs or not.
Is Bosa just not getting enough help around him to be consistently great?
I think that's part of it, but also I going into last week, he was awesome last week, but everybody on the defense was. yeah, he only came up with 1 sack, but he had a forced fumble and the recovery on the play, and he was close to he was close on probably 3 or 4 separate plays. But I said going into last week, like, that's the bot, like. Yeah, the strength in numbers filling in for Javon Hargrave, and they're going to miss him. Da, 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 da. Leonard Floyd had done nothing, and Nick Bosa is paid to – he hadn't been bad, but he's paid to be dominant. He's paid to be – to wreak havoc no matter who's chipping him, no matter what running back they're throwing at his side, no matter what – he is paid to dominate, and he had just been pretty good. He dominated in week 4. That's great. But he has to be better. I think the personnel around him matters a little. But dude, he's the he was the highest paid non-quarterback in the league. Like, he has to impact every single game.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Seaward podcast, of us, our Cardinals talk on the web. Let's move on and talk about this actual matchup. Cardinals versus 49ers. What are the matchups we're looking at? What do you think is going to happen? That's coming next on Rise Up Seaward. We're back on the Rise Up Seaward podcast, of us, our Cardinals talk on the web, talking with Kyle Madsen from Niners Wire. We're looking into this matchup between the Cardinals and the 49ers from a distance. What do you see from the Cardinals? Because first 3 weeks, good vibes. Last week, the way they got manhandled by the Commanders, the panic button, the covers come off the panic button, and we're ready to hit it, is what it kind of what feels like. They've scored a first drive touchdown every week, and then the offense has gone kind of stagnant. Defensively, they've been good and bad. They completely dominated the Rams. They shut down the Lions in the second half, but they had no answer for Jane Daniels and Cliff Kingsbury's offense, and they had no answer for Josh Allen. What is the feeling about the Cardinals as an opponent?
I have a – what's the word I'm looking for? Like a – I think an appropriate respect for the Cardinals, because I think Marvin Harrison Jr. is sensational. I think some of what Kyler Murray did the first couple of weeks was just outrageous. Like just like one of one type of stuff from Kyler. And when you have a quarterback like that, like offensively, there's always going to be like that worry, especially against this Niners defense. I could see a scenario where the Cardinals are just going like 8 of 12 on third downs and the Niners just can't stop them.
Which
like
has that, been their problem the last couple of weeks is third down. They went 4 for 11 against the Commanders, but that was they went 3 for 3 in when they were down 21 points in the fourth quarter. And so they went 1 for 8 to start. And that was essentially the whole problem they had, because they are a good offensive team that just on money downs, they're bad right now.
Yeah. That is that, and that's just kind of like, that's why I don't know exactly how to feel about Arizona, because they looked so good those first couple of weeks. It's like, man, that game in Buffalo was super impressive. Like, man, that's a good, you lose by, was it 6, 34, 28?
Yeah.
But man, that's it. That is super impressive. And then they go beat the hell out of the Rams. I know it was a beat up version of the Rams, but that's what you're expected to do if you want to be a good team. Like, man. And then, okay, you hang with the Lions 20-13. Okay. That's not bad. Kind of, you know, a little bit what I was expecting, a close game, respect. And then the game against Washington, Washington hanging up 42 points is whatever. Their offense looks unstoppable right now. Only scoring 14 against them.
That Washington defense was terrible. Right. Like going into last week, we noted that they were giving up 7.7 yards per passing attempt. I think it was 30th in the league, and 5.1 yards per rush, which was 31st in the league. There's no excuse for the Cardinals not to move the ball offensively against them.
Yeah. And that's why I was actually just talking to him at the radio station right now, but I was talking to the show after me. I host a sports talk show, so we're all big football guys. And we were literally discussing this, like, no idea what to make of the Cardinals. Like, could they go into Levi's Stadium? I think the Niners are favored by like 7.5.
Yeah.
Could they go into Levi's Stadium and just win outright? Like, 1,000%. Like, I don't know why that couldn't happen. But on the other hand, is it like what you just said? Like, yeah, they just can't convert on third down, and their defense
is bad. The defense is bad right now. It's just terrible.
And that, so I you say that, and it's, I see them hold the Lions to 20.
Like, and nothing in the thing. Yeah. They make no sense at all.
So that's kind of it. I think they're probably a like 9-8 type of team where, their ceiling looks like, hey, could this team like make a run? And then their floor is, are they going to win a game the rest of the year?
that's what it's like. If they can't win, if they can't beat if they can't beat the Commanders, who are they going to beat? Especially since their lineup the next 4 weeks, the Niners, the Packers, the Chargers, and the Dolphins. And Tua might be back. No, Dolphins look terrible right now, but if Tua's back.
Bad vibes in Miami. Yeah, man. So I go back. I don't know how Cardinals fans feel about this, and I can't remember if we've discussed this before, but going back to my first, like when when I first like followed football to the point of like knowing offensive linemen and stuff, right? So I go back to like 04, 05 range. It feels like the Niners and Cardinals, no matter what, are gonna give each other problems. It's just always, and I know that the numbers probably don't bear this out, but the Cardinals are a team I look at on the schedule and I go, that's two tough games. They could be projected to go 3-14 and be like, nope.
Case in point, the 2018 season when the Cardinals won three games, two of them were against the Niners.
Right. I mean, the Niners weren't good in 2018 either, but like, that's just it. Like, it just, they always, I don't know what it is, but there's a healthy respect there. And I think what I believe the ceiling is for this Cardinals team. And because of that, I'm never going to go into a week going like, oh yeah, they're definitely going to lose.
One matchup I think will be really fun to watch is Nick Bosa against Paris Johnson. Paris Johnson's been fantastic at left tackle so far. And if there's one player that gave Bosa a little bit of trouble, it was DJ Humphries before, you know, last season. Now he's gone. That's going to be a fun one to watch, especially since aside from the Patriots game, the Niners haven't been getting much from other positions. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited to watch Bosa versus Johnson because that's a five-star matchup there. Great young tackle and, you know, arguably the best pass rusher in the league. So that'll be fun to watch.
Jonah Williams still out?
He might be out for the season. It's Kelvin Beachum back at right tackle. So
I would assume, my guess is, because Bosa will move around, my guess is he finds a home across from Beachum.
Oh, that'll be lining up on. That's problematic then. Beachum's okay. That's about all he is at this point at age 35. He's not terrible. He's capable of being a starter. And yes, that's about it.
It's like a replacement level offensive tackle.
Yes.
The Niners would take one of those. How do you pronounce your center's name?
What's that?
How do you pronounce the center's name?
Froholt. Yelda Froholt.
Yelda?
Yes.
Great. I'm going to use that as a bit on the radio.
He's
a wild name.
He's great. He's great. He's funny. He's Danish. He's totally he's an intellectual meathead, if that makes any sort of sense at all. Like, oh, he talked about like for his home.
Oh my God. All right, go ahead.
He talked about like in his neighborhood, what he would love to have is just a bunch of big heavy rocks to move around to work out with in his front lawn, just to show off. He was the locker room strongman until they signed Evan Brown, and Evan Brown is stronger than him, which didn't make Froholt all that happy to lose that title. But
6'5", 310, Danish dude who went to Arkansas. Like, are you kidding me? I'm all in. This is my new favorite player in the league. What a guy.
Here's the thing. That might be one of the most fantastic, but it was absolutely the most underrated move that the Cardinals made two off seasons ago because the guy had started four games in his career. And they brought him, they signed him, and he was immediately working as the starting center all offseason. And everyone around the Cardinals, covering the Cardinals, are like, since, you know, Rodney Hudson had left, they're like, they're going to make another move. Yelda Froholt's not going to be their start. What's a Yelda Froholt? And we're like, they're gonna get another veteran center. They're gonna get one. Like, I thought Todd said that all offseason. This is not the final move they're making. They never did. And then he was good.
Uh-huh.
Well, I'm like, wow. That never happens. That literally never happens with the Cardinals.
Love it for him. I hope he has a huge day on Sunday.
What other matchups are you gonna be paying attention to in this game?
I'm definitely tapped in on the Charvarius Ward / D'Amador Lenore v. Marvin Harrison Jr. matchup.
Honestly, I do this every week. It's literally anyone. It's always the guy that's going to be covered, Marv.
Yeah, man. Like, Charvarius Ward was a All-Pro last year, and D'Amador Lenore is really making an ascension as a. He's their outside corner in base, and then he slides into the slot when they go to nickel. But he's really ascended as a really high quality corner, Pro Bowl caliber type of corner. So I'm really interested to see how they decide to distribute that matchup. with Marvin Harrison Jr. A guy like Michael Wilson intrigues me a lot in a matchup like this, because the Niners, they have Isaac Yiadom as their third corner, although they've started working in Renardo Green, who's one of their second round picks as a rookie. They started working him in a little bit as a third corner. I'd be interested to see how a matchup with one of those guys goes against Michael Wilson, who's a player I think really highly of.
And did really, like, his best game last year was the 2-touchdown game that he had against the Niners, and that's when everyone kind of put on his radar. Oh, he's coming around. He's the perfect guy to have. He just needs to produce more. Like he's mm-hmm. got the perfect mindset to be a number two receiver, mm-hmm. and playing out there at the Z, but just isn't consistent enough so far. But at least he's been healthy, because he had the worst luck with injuries when he was at Stanford.
Yeah, right. Well, because he's a local guy, and so he was a big draft crush of 49ers Twitter. So definitely following Michael Wilson's career. And I have him in a dynasty fantasy league, but that's a separate conversation.
Hey.
And then if Trey McBride is going to play, which from what I understand, that's still up in the air.
He's back at practice, out of protocol. So I'm 98% certain he should be good to go for Sunday.
Okay. Yeah, he's going to cook. The 49ers right now in the second level of their defense just don't have anybody who can run with him and who can stick with him aside from Fred Warner. But my guess is they're going to do whatever they can
to keep him away from Fred Warner.
Yeah, to get Trey McBride matched up with Devondre Campbell or whoever else it is. So really interested to see how the Niners go about trying to stop him. And then James Conner, they apparently just can't stop James Conner. So that's not even a matchup I'm intrigued to watch. I'm taking him in whatever is over is.
Let me see what that is. And we'll talk about in the next segment, but yeah. That rushing the attack with Jordan Mason, do you see any scenario in which the Cardinals can slow him down? Because the only running back that they had any success against now was Kyren Williams. And that was when the Rams were playing with a third string left tackle. They fell behind early, and that was it. I mean, they had no chance because they couldn't stop Brian Robinson. They couldn't stop either Jahmyr Gibbs or David Montgomery, and they didn't really do much to stop James Cook either.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to, like, I hate saying no, because there was a year in 2022 that I just played the Chargers, and the Chargers just had the worst run defense in the league. And it was like, oh, the Niners are going to run all over them. And the Niners ran for like 64 yards or something stupid. It was not. So maybe the Cardinals just sell out and decide, hey, you know what? Brock Purdy's going to have to beat us. And they sell out to stop the run. Yeah, they load the box, and it's just there's no room for Jordan Mason. Yeah, sure. But in that event, I think that Brock Purdy and the Niners' weapons are good enough to take advantage of that. So the short answer is no. With the way the Niners offense is working right now and with the command of the offense that Brock Purdy has, it's just really, really hard to decide you're just going to sell out and stop a run game as well designed and as well run as the Niners.
Coming up next on the Res Receiver Podcast, best our Cardinals talk about, let's talk about how we think it's going to go down. Predictions, picks, that's coming up next on the Res Receiver Red. We're back on the Rise of Series podcast. It's our Cardinals talk on the web with Kyle Madsen and Niners Wire. Niners are 7.5-point favorites. I'm guessing that really the only chance that the Cardinals have against San Francisco this week, based on what we've seen defensively, is that it's got to be a track meet. And they've got to create at least one turnover for the Niners.
Mm-hmm.
How do you see this going down?
Yeah, I think that's probably right. Do they need a turnover? Yeah, you probably, this is where, dude, I don't know. Like, this is where I struggle with the Cardinals, because I don't know what version of that team we're going to get. But if you're going to beat San Francisco, I think you have to force them to have long drives, because that is what, like, if they're just going to chew up yards underneath, let them take it. And then try and make them score in the red zone, because they've not been very good in the red zone this year. I think they're scoring at 50% of their red zone trips. Brock Purdy, as good as he's been at ball security, is still a little bit of an issue for him. But yeah, if you can make it a little bit of a track meet, that's probably your best shot. But I don't know exactly. I don't have a lot of strong.
Well, I say that because, like, it doesn't look like they'll be able to slow the run game. If they can't slow the run game, the pass game's going to be open. And so the Niners are going to score points. So the only chance the Cardinals are going to have is if they move the ball, or somehow come up with big plays on third down defensively, which has been tough to do because the Cardinals have almost no threat of a pass rush. And, like, that's going to be, like, they had 5 sacks against the Rams. And, again, third string right tackle, or left tackle in the game. That's when Dennis Gardeck had 3 sacks. Zaven Collins had a sack. And that, I think almost all of those came beating that third string left tackle. That's not going to happen against Trent Williams.
Yeah, you think probably not. I think if you can, here's the thing. If you can get him in third and long, where you can kind of pin your ears back and go, maybe confuse Brock Purdy with a couple of blitzes. Deebo Samuel's not a great separator. Juwan Jennings not a great separator. Maybe you get Purdy to throw a couple of throws into traffic. But yeah, I think it all starts, the more we kind of talk about this and I think about it, I think it all kind of starts. I think you have to sell out to stop the run and just try and get them into second and third and long where they're not comfortable. Like, that's just, I think that's, when it comes to stopping the Niners offense, I think that's probably the move. But I think the Cardinals are going to be able to score. Like, I don't know how the Niners are going to get stops.
I literally just, I'm on BetMGM's site, and there were no rushing props till 10 seconds ago. They popped up, like, immediately, because they only had a couple of passing props, but, like, the rushing props and the receiving props, they came up just now. And James Conner's line, 57.5 yards.
Oh, I'm going over, dude.
Kyler, 29.5. Now, granted, it looks like that all they have are the Cardinals. They don't have Jordan Mason on there, but yeah, I mean, 57.5. I mean, the Cardinals run the ball well, and they've proven that they can run the ball. Like, they could not run the ball at all against Detroit, but no running back does well against Detroit. That was kind of a one-off there.
Yeah, man. James Conner, 57.5. Yeah, dude, bang the over on that. The only way that goes under to me is if it's one of those weird games where the Niners, like, score on their opening drive and then the Cardinals turn it over.
Yeah, they get down 2 scores and they're playing catch up the entire game.
But even then, I'm like, James Conner just kind of cooks the Niners.
I am worried about this game because how the Cardinals respond to this game, I think, kind of tells me what type of team they are, because they got embarrassed last week. And over the last 2 seasons, they've only had 2 games that just were on the last show. I referred to it as a stinky, stink, stink game. They had that last year against the Rams, but all the other games as a bad team, they were competitive in. That last week, now, if they can come back, you know, everything's fine if they come back and beat the Niners. But I think we get kind of back on track with the good vibes if it's a close game. But I'm worried that San Francisco also matches up very poorly against the Cardinals, or, like, that you guys match up well on your end for the Cardinals, and they get beat by 2 scores again. It's a 30-17 type game, or you know, 35-20 type game, and it just spirals. And I'm worried about that. But I think the Cardinals will compete, but that's not based on anything other than the vibes this team has given over the last year and a half.
Yeah, that's, and I would kind of, I don't think that a two-score win is here for the Niners. They're just not playing well enough. And I think that's where I get where you're at. Like you're thinking of a maximized version of the 49ers, and that makes sense. Like I understand the thought process, but this Niners team isn't playing great. Like I've talked about, they've made special teams miscues in three straight games. They can't get off the field on third down. They're not scoring in the red zone. Like they're vulnerable for sure. I know the Cardinals have their faults too, but I still think that this is going to be tighter than a two score game. The Niners just don't have the horses defensively right now to, I think, really go like put the screws to a team and blow them out. The Patriots notwithstanding, but the Cardinals are a tier or two above where the Patriots are.
I hope so. I really hope so. So what's your final call on this? How do you think it plays out?
I think the 49ers win. I don't like the line. -7.5 feels like a lot. I think the 49ers win something like 27-23.
I'm going to say that this game is going to be close. I don't think the Cardinals are going to have many answers defensively for what the 49ers are going to do offensively. And so I'm going to go with a 49ers 31-27 win. I will go with that. 31-27. It's going to be close on the end, but the Cardinals, either the defense gives up a game-winning touchdown, or the Cardinals are unable to convert, or either don't have enough time or fail on that last drive. I want to think that the Cardinals will be able to bounce back, but I really, really worry about. I think the Cardinals are going to struggle defensively, and their only chances is to take advantage, to be better, like execute better on third down, and to execute well against the team that has struggled to get off the field on third down. But I Jordan Mason, the way he's running the ball, and then on top of that, you know, building the offense, how the offense builds off of that, I just think the Cardinals don't have – they keep losing. They're down a guy on their defensive line, Justin Jones. They're supposedly their best guy on the defensive line. He's done for the year, tore his triceps like Hargrave. So, yeah. I mean, we're going to see a lot of games where the Cardinals give up 30 points, I think, the rest of the way, and it's just going to be a matter of whether the offense stays on track and can do that. And thus far, they haven't been able to do that. But I think they come back. I think they bounce back, and that the Cardinals will be competitive, but ultimately lose down the stretch. I could see the Niners going down for a game-winning touchdown at the end, or Kyler having the ball late in the game and either not having enough time or just not making enough plays down the stretch. We already talked Connor going over his total. They don't have any passing props for Brock Purdy yet other than passing touchdowns. Would you say over or under 1.5 touchdown passes?
Probably over. Yeah. I think I'm going to go over. Their offense is just so different this year. From where Brock Purdy's like second in the league in average depth of target. I think he's third in big time throw rate per PFF.
He's so good. And he's so dumb. And it makes me so mad that I tell you this every time you're on. How could the 49ers mess up a quarterback pick so badly at the top of the draft and then end up with Purdy, who is so good?
Whether he wins a title, I don't know. But from just the Kyle Shanahan, John Lynch era, like if they don't draft Purdy and the Trey Lance thing goes how I think the Trey Lance thing would have gone, like they're probably either looking for a new coach this year or next. And instead they fall backwards into Mr. Irrelevant the next year. And it turns
out he's pretty good. Who's been like, you know, I think have we reached the point where the debate about him being a good quarterback is finally done?
Yeah, I think the debate of whether he's good, I think pretty much everybody acknowledges that he's good. It's just a matter of he's not a tier one quarterback, but how high in tier two is he?
Yeah.
I think that's kind of where does he land in that like Trevor Lawrence, Jared Goff, Derek Carr, Kirk Cousins tier, like where does he land in that group?
Honestly, the top. Like because of what he does so well. I like of those guys that you mentioned, I like Kirk Cousins the most.
Mm-hmm.
But Purdy is just like, and I know he's got the talent around him.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the fact that his talent, what he does well, is something that translates to literally every system. The downfield accuracy that he has on intermediate and deep targets is amazing. That is a skill set that is mm-hmm. hard to replicate anywhere else. And yeah. his decision making and the trust that he has in his players around him, it's wonderful. I mean, why? As a Cardinals fan, we can't get the quarterback position right, and we have a guy like Kyler Murray, and people don't even believe in Kyler Murray here. I'm like,
I'm in on Kyler, man.
I know this. I know the second he goes somewhere else, because if this goes poorly this year, Kyler's going to end up somewhere else, and is going to have a Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold type, and he will be a top tier quarterback for some other team, winning championships for them instead of here, because we have a poverty franchise here, and then. You know, it is what it is. All right, man. That is Kyle Madsen over at the Niners Wire. You can catch him on, you can get his stuff on Niners Wire. Of course, you can catch him on social media, Kyle A. Madsen as well. Kyle, thanks for coming on again. It's a pleasure every single time. The Cardinals will meet again with the 49ers in week 18, which is technically next year. So we will definitely talk then.
Sounds great. Thanks, Jeff.
All right. Thanks for the time. That wraps up this edition of the Rise of Serious podcast. Best of Cardinals talk on the web. Next up, tomorrow, Seth and I will be doing our own preview. And that wraps things up. Thanks again for listening. We'll be back again soon.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.